Imagine your smart thermostat isn't just, cooling your house.
Yeah.
Like, imagine it is actively analyzing your sleep patterns.
Oh, yeah.
Tracking the exact minute you toss and turn just to help a marketer sell you a highly specific memory foam mattress tomorrow afternoon.
It sounds like sci-fi, but it's really not.
Right. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are looking at the actual mechanics of modern database marketing. I mean, we hear the cliche all the time, right? That data is the new oil of the digital economy.
Yeah, you hear that constantly.
But raw crude just sitting in the ground is completely useless. To actually make it valuable, you need this highly sophisticated multi-billion dollar piece of machinery to extract it, refine it, and pump it into the targeting algorithms that dictate exactly what you see online.
Which is exactly what this machinery does.
Exactly. So today, we are basically tearing down the engine of that machinery. We're going to see how companies figure out what you want, often before you even realize you want it yourself.
Because it really is the defining architecture of modern commerce. And our grounding text for this deep dive is a really comprehensive 2025 analysis. It's titled, What is Database Marketing? A Complete Analysis.
By Lauren Popek, right?
Yes, by Lauren Popek from Reach Marketing. And, you know, it is definitely worth noting their perspective here. Reach is a major B2B lead generation firm. I mean, they boast having generated over 1.1 million leads.
Wow. Over a million.
Yeah. So they are not just, academic observers critiquing the marketing landscape from the sidelines. They are the mechanics actually building these data engines.
Right. They're in the trenches.
Exactly. They are dealing with identity resolution, CRM integration, and predictive modeling every single day.
Which gives us a totally unfiltered look under the hood because, I mean, the mandate for marketers has fundamentally shifted. They aren't just buying billboards hoping the right demographic happens to drive past anymore.
No, those days are long gone.
It's all about hyper-personalized communication now. But, to pull off that level of targeting, the sheer volume of data ingestion is just staggering.
It really is. I mean, the ultimate goal is this persistent 360-degree view of the consumer. And the source actually contrasts this pretty sharply with the origins of database marketing back in the 1980s.
Oh, right. The junk mail era.
Basically, yeah. Back then, direct marketing was just a blunt instrument. Businesses relied on these siloed, completely static mailing lists.
So if you ordered a jacket from a catalog or something.
Right. Your name went on a flat list and you basically received the exact same piece of mail as 2 million other people. It was just static data.
Okay, so let's unpack this, because the evolution from that 1980s model to today is just vast. Mm. I mean, old school mass marketing was like throwing a bowl of spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks.
That's a great way to put it.
You make a mess, you waste resources, and maybe like one or two noodles actually hang on. But modern database marketing is entirely different.
Oh, completely.
It's like using a laser-guided robotic arm to place exactly one perfectly cooked noodle onto your plate right as you sit down for dinner. But the mechanics of how they actually get that laser targeting is what I really want to dig into.
Right, the how.
Yeah, because we aren't filling out massive paper surveys anymore.
Yeah.
So how does a modern CRM actually ingest and like resolve our identities across so many fragmented touch points?
Well, that is the core technical hurdle the industry has really had to solve. Lauren Popek's article outlines the whole life cycle of this data. But if we look at the actual mechanism of ingestion,
yeah,
it is really all about solving identity fragmentation. Think about your own behavior for a second. You might, click a targeted ad on a social media app on your phone while commuting.
Sure. Happens all the time.
Right. Then later, you browse the actual website on your work laptop. And then finally, maybe you complain to a customer service chatbot on your tablet.
And to a basic database, that looked like three totally different users.
Yeah.
Right, because the cookies are different, the devices are different. I'm leaving this totally shattered digital footprint.
Yeah, a shattered footprint is a good way to describe it. So the modern CRM doesn't just collect data, it performs what's called identity resolution.
Identity resolution, okay.
Yeah, it uses deterministic matching, which is like when you use the same email address to log into the app and the website.
Oh, gotcha.
And then it combines that with probabilistic matching. That's where it uses algorithms to analyze your IP address, your browser type, and your behavioral patterns.
So it's guessing.
It's estimating with very high confidence that the phone user and the laptop user are the exact same person. They stitch that shattered footprint into a single unified profile.
Wow. So they are constantly reconciling this unstructured data like my angry chat logs with a bot, with structured data like my purchase history, just to build this singular digital avatar of me.
Yes, that is the refining process. And once that profile is built and centralized, the engine moves directly into segmentation and analysis.
Okay, so slicing up the audience.
Right. It isn't just about knowing who you are. It is about putting you into a highly specific cohort so they can execute a campaign and then monitor the performance of that campaign in real time.
And I guess feed that reaction back into the system.
Exactly. They feed it back in to optimize the very next touch point. It is just this continuous self-feeding loop.
I mean, I get the ingestion part. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But I struggle with the actual segmentation. Once they have this beautifully stitched together digital avatar of me sitting in their CRM, what are they actually looking for?
Well, they're evaluating you.
Because the source talks about grading customers, and that just feels inherently, I don't know, reductive.
Well, what's fascinating here is that businesses are essentially putting a highly calculated price tag on your loyalty.
A price tag. Wow.
They have to, really. Their resources are finite, so they need a mathematical framework to evaluate your inherent value as a consumer. Popex Text details two major analytical frameworks used for this.
Okay, what's the first one?
The most foundational one is called RFM segmentation.
Right. Recency, frequency, monetary.
Yes, exactly. The model looks at your transaction history and assigns a score based on those three variables. So recency is how long has it been since your last interaction?
Yeah.
Frequency is how often do you transact? Mm. And monetary is what is your average order value? By plotting those scores, the database automatically clusters users into groups.
You know, I read that and I immediately thought about it, like grading a friendship.
Oh, really? How so?
Yeah. So like recency is when we last hung out. Frequency is how often we text during the week. And monetary is, well, who usually picks up the tab at dinner.
That is actually a highly functional way to visualize the algorithm.
Is it?
Yeah. And if you extend your own analogy, it perfectly explains the operational logic behind the marketing. I mean, you don't spend the same emotional energy or financial resources on a friend who hasn't texted you in 2 years and always splits the bill as you do on your absolute best friend who you see every single Friday.
That's a fair point. I mean, the best friend gets a premium steak dinner for their birthday. The distant acquaintance gets a generic happy birthday text, if that.
Right. And in business, that steak dinner translates to customer acquisition cost, or ASI, and return on investment.
Ah, okay, the metrics.
Exactly. If a marketing department has a limited ad spend budget, RFM segmentation ensures they aren't wasting impressions on the digital equivalent of a distant acquaintance.
So they focus on the best friends.
Yes. They allocate the heavy spend to the champion segment to drive repeat purchases.
Yeah.
Or they might target the at-risk high monetary segment with really aggressive discounts just to prevent churn.
But wait, isn't RFM incredibly flawed in a modern context? Like,
yes.
Humans are vastly more complex than just three historical data points.
It definitely has its limits.
Yeah, because if I buy a lawnmower, my monetary score spikes, right? But my frequency drops to zero because I don't need another lawnmower for 10 years.
Right.
Doesn't grading customers entirely on past behavior lead to massive marketing blind spots?
It does, which is exactly why RFM is increasingly viewed as just a baseline now rather than the cutting edge. Like you said, it is purely descriptive. It only tells you what already happened.
Now, how do they fix the blind spot?
To fix it, advanced databases incorporate customer lifetime value, or CLV. This isn't just looking backward. It is a probabilistic model.
Probabilistic, meaning predicting the future.
Right. CLV estimates the total net profit a company can expect from you over the entire future duration of your relationship with them.
So instead of grading what I did, they are forecasting what I will do.
Precisely.
But how do they calculate that? It can't just be a simple average.
No, it is not. Modern CLV models use really complex regression analysis. They take your RFM scores, but then they layer on your behavioral data, demographic cohort trends, and even like macroeconomic indicators to project your future spend.
Wow. All of that just for one score.
Yeah, and this metric actively dictates your real-time customer experience. If the model calculates that your CLV is exceptionally high, you might get routed to a localized premium human customer service agent.
Oh, I see.
But if your CLV is low, the system deliberately routes you to the automated chatbot. The CRM is dynamically allocating service based on your projected future value.
Okay, forecasting value makes financial sense. But here's where it gets really interesting, because the Popek article pushes this even further into the realm of the predictive.
It certainly does.
Yeah, we aren't just talking about spreadsheets estimating lifetime spend anymore. The integration of artificial intelligence and machine learning is shifting this entire discipline from reactive to proactive. They are predicting specific behaviors before we even initiate them.
This is absolutely the frontier of the database marketing engine, predictive analytics. Machine learning models aren't just categorizing data anymore. They are actively hunting for intricate, nonlinear patterns that human analysts could never, ever spot.
It's wild.
And the text highlights a really compelling outcome of this. Companies utilizing predictive analytics saw a full 10% increase in sales.
A 10% bump just from deploying better math. I mean, I want to understand the causality there. Why does the prediction actually drive the sale?
It is all about intervention. Let's look at predicting churn, which is when a customer is about to cancel a subscription.
Okay.
A human marketer might notice a customer hasn't logged in for a month, but an AI model, it looks at dozens of weighted features simultaneously. It notices that your login frequency dropped by 14%, you spent 30 seconds hovering near the account settings page, and you recently interacted with an article about a competitor.
So it sees the writing on the wall.
Exactly. The model calculates an 88% probability that you will cancel within 48 hours.
So it flags me for a human to look at.
Actually, better than flagging you, it triggers an automated, hyper-personalized intervention.
Oh.
Yeah. Before you even make the conscious decision to hit cancel, the database automatically emails you a tailored 20% discount offer or maybe unlocks a premium feature on your account. The 10% sales increase comes from the system acting autonomously to save revenue before the drop-off even occurs.
Man, that makes perfect sense. It's basically neutralizing the threat before the threat fully materializes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the data feeding those models is getting wildly intimate. The article brought up the Internet of Things, or IoT. And this just blew my mind.
It's a huge shift.
Yeah. Because I always thought of a smart thermostat as just a convenient piece of hardware. But in the context of database marketing, that device is essentially a Trojan horse for data ingestion.
It really is a profound shift in product design. Historically, you know, a company sold you a thermostat, the transaction concluded, and they had zero visibility into how you actually used it.
You just put it on the wall and that was it.
Exactly. Now, because the device is connected to the Internet of Things, the product itself acts as a continuous, real-time data node. It logs when you leave the house, your preferred ambient temperature, and exactly when you go to sleep.
And they dump all those daily usage patterns right into the CRM to figure out what else to sell me.
Yep.
So they literally use the product I already bought to build the marketing model for the next product.
They do. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, all of these granular data points, like the AI intervention triggers, the unstructured IoT data lakes, they all feed into what the industry calls customer journey mapping.
Customer journey mapping.
Yes. Brands are visualizing the entire life cycle of a consumer across every possible touch point.
But why do they need to map it so meticulously? Like, what's the end goal of that map?
To identify friction. A journey map shows exactly where users experience drop-off. And this isn't just limited to digital interfaces either.
Really? Physical too?
Oh, absolutely. Retailers use digital data, like Wi-Fi pinging on smartphones, to map physical foot traffic in their stores. They cross-reference that physical path with the digital purchase history to optimize the actual floor layout.
That is crazy.
They're placing high-margin items precisely where the predictive data says a specific segment of shoppers is most likely to pause.
So the physical architecture of a retail store is being actively manipulated by the digital footprints we leave behind.
Precisely, and we see it in other fields too. In healthcare, hospitals map patient journeys by analyzing adherence data from connected medical devices or pharmacy refill histories.
To do what? Send reminders.
Yes. They trigger personalized automated interventions like targeted health tips or automated appointment rescheduling just to prevent patient drop-off. And financial institutions map journey data to dynamically adjust loan offers based on real-time risk profiles.
I mean, this level of integration is incredibly powerful, but I keep hitting the same wall here.
What's that?
The AI anticipating my churn, the thermostat logging my sleep, the retailer tracking my physical steps in an aisle.
Mm.
This raises an absolutely massive issue.
The privacy aspect.
Yeah. There is a very thin line between a hyper-personalized customer journey and an invasive surveillance apparatus.
It's true.
Like, if I get an email that says, hey, we noticed you lingered in the shoe aisle for 4 minutes today. Here is a discount. I am not buying those shoes. I am deleting the app. So how do marketers balance our modern demand for hyper-personalization with our absolute dread of feeling spied on? How do they mitigate that massive creep factor?
Well, this raises an important question, and it is arguably the single greatest structural challenge facing the industry today. The POPIC text actually focuses heavily on consumer resistance and the changing regulatory environment.
Do they know people hate it?
The industry definitely recognized that over-personalization triggers a severe backlash. When the targeting becomes too opaque, trust just collapses.
Which is why we are seeing the death of the third-party cookie, right?
Exactly.
For years, the whole ecosystem relied on these invisible trackers following us from site to site without our explicit knowledge. But now, browsers are finally blocking them.
And that deprecation of third-party cookies is forcing a radical architectural pivot. Marketers can no longer rely on covertly harvested, decentralized tracking data. They are being forced to pivot to what's called first-party data and zero-party data.
Wait, what is the distinction between those two? I hear them used interchangeably a lot.
They are different. First-party data is behavioral information a company collects directly from your interactions on their own platforms, like your purchase history or your website clicks on their site.
Okay.
Zero-party data is information you intentionally and proactively share with them. Think of, like, filling out a detailed preference profile in exchange for a loyalty reward.
Ah, I see. So the covert tracking model is being replaced by an overt value exchange. Like, I will give you a 15% discount code and better recommendations, but you have to explicitly hand over your preferences.
Exactly.
It becomes a purely transactional relationship.
It has to be, because the regulatory environment demands it now. Laws like the GDPR in Europe and the CCPA in California have fundamentally altered the liability of data storage.
Right, the fines are massive.
Yeah, it isn't just about avoiding the creep factor anymore. Non-compliance carries severe financial penalties. The mandate is clear, explicit consent, transparent data usage policies, and the consumer must have the operational right to have their data deleted.
But, you know, even with explicit consent, there is still the vulnerability of the database itself.
Oh, the security risk.
Yeah, because if I give a brand my zero-party data because I trust them, that data still sits in a centralized server somewhere. And we see the headlines every single week.
Yeah.
Centralized servers get breached, and suddenly millions of CRM profiles are being sold on the dark web.
It's a huge problem.
If trust is the ultimate currency of first-party data, how does the industry solve the security flaw of centralized storage?
Well, that vulnerability is exactly why The Source introduces blockchain technology as a potential paradigm shift for database marketing.
Blockchain, okay.
Yeah, most people associate blockchain strictly with cryptocurrency, but its underlying utility is as a decentralized, immutable ledger.
Okay, I have a rudimentary understanding of blockchain. How does a decentralized ledger actually secure a marketer's database?
Well, think about it this way. In a traditional CRM, all your personally identifiable information, your PII, sits in a centralized honeypot. If a hacker breaches the firewall, they just get everything.
Right, the whole database.
Blockchain changes the architecture entirely. Instead of storing the raw data centrally, the data could be decentralized and secured through cryptographic hashing.
Wait, so the company doesn't actually hold my raw data?
In an advanced blockchain model, they wouldn't need to. Through mechanisms like zero-knowledge proofs, a marketer could theoretically verify that you belong to a specific targeting segment, say, high-income frequent buyers, without ever actually seeing your raw financial data or your identity.
Oh, wow.
The blockchain verifies the truth of the statement without exposing the underlying data. Furthermore, smart contracts could fully automate consent.
How would that work?
You could grant temporary, highly specific access to your data for a particular campaign, and the smart contract automatically revokes that access the very moment the campaign ends. It brings absolute transparency and security to the value exchange.
Man, so what does this all mean? We started by looking at the 1980s, where businesses basically bought flat lists of names to blindly blast out catalogs.
The blunt instrument days.
Right. And we have traced the evolution of that machinery through the development of the CRM, the deterministic identity resolution, and those mathematical grading frameworks of RFM and customer lifetime value.
It's a long journey.
And we've seen how predictive AI and IoT devices shifted the engine from reacting to our past to actively intervening in our future. And now, driven by the collapse of the cookie, these massive regulatory shifts, the industry is frantically trying to rebuild trust through first-party value exchanges and potentially decentralized blockchain ledgers.
It is a constantly adapting, highly sophisticated ecosystem. I mean, the sheer computational power dedicated to understanding consumer intent is just staggering.
It really is. But the core takeaway for you listening to this is recognizing your own agency within this machinery.
Exactly.
You are the data. You are the fuel that powers these predictor models.
Yeah.
Understanding how the engine functions, why you see a specific intervention offer, or why a website dynamically alters its layout just for you, it strips away the illusion.
Knowledge is power in this space.
Right. You aren't just a passive node in a marketing matrix anymore. You are an active participant who can demand value in exchange for your digital footprint.
I think that is the most critical perspective to hold. And, you know, to build on that idea of the value exchange, I'll leave you with a final thought regarding blockchain and data ownership.
Oh, I like this. Lay it on me.
Well, if our personal data truly is the most valuable commodity in the modern economy, and brands rely on first-party relationships to survive, what happens when blockchain fully democratizes that data? Will we reach a tipping point where consumers completely bypass data brokers and ad networks? Imagine a world where you maintain your own decentralized cryptographic ledger and major corporations have to directly license and pay you royalties just to tap into your personal data well.
Wow. A localized personal data monopoly. We essentially set up the poll booth instead of giving away oil for free.
Exactly.
I absolutely love that concept. Well, that wraps up our exploration of the database marketing engine for today. We have traced the entire pipeline from the raw fragmented data you generate through the predictive AI refineries and out into the hyper-personalized ecosystem you navigate every single day. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the algorithms, keep an eye on your data footprint, and we will catch you next time.